You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Duncan and Taylor, sustainability engineer Kate Boylan, runs the internal green team at her workplace, and she talks to me about how to get businesses and groups and individuals on board with Plastic Free July. We also talk about her work in setting up safe landfills, construction and demolition waste, and establishing a circular economy. I begin by asking Kate on what's currently the biggest issue in New Zealand's sustainability process.
Hey, look, I think there's a whole bunch of challenges as well. So, I mean, I've always had a real personal interest in waste. I've just done a big piece of work on construction and demolition waste, and I don't think I realised the severity of that issue until I did that research and that writing as well. And so that was a real eye-opener. Like, you know, we as individuals we have a lot of places to improve, but we don't construction and demolition waste in check as well. We're not really going to start seeing good reductions in waste, because then you have to think about how you're dealing with that waste. Is it going into landfills?
What's the process like behind setting up a landfill?
It's really interesting, a properly designed and managed landfill. And I mean, hey, I don't personally like landfills. I'd love if we just didn't create any waste and we didn't need landfills full stop. But the way they engineer them is they have these incredible liner systems that keep the waste contained and don't let them leach or contaminate the environment around them. Most of them these days have gas collection systems where they collect the methane that the waste produces through tricky chemical organic processes, and they suck up the methane and they take it and it gets pumped to a gas plant where they turn the methane into electricity and CO2, and so it's a bit safer to then emit that back into the environment. But
this is jumping back a bit, but you did mention construction is one of the biggest contributors of waste.
Yeah.
What percentage of that? Do you have a rough figure?
Yeah, well, no, so construction and demolition waste, unfortunately, there isn't a lot of good statistics or measurements around that, but it has been estimated by BRANZ, the Building Research Association of New Zealand, before. It's been estimated at about like 50 to 60%.
Oof.
And I guess, as I was talking about landfills before, and so that's where all our general household waste goes, a lot of the time construction and demolition waste, if it's inert, therefore if it's not going to react with anything too dramatically, it will go into a clean fill. So, and those clean fills have less requirements around the lining system and stuff, I think, because they're not as damaging to the surrounding environment. But, it still seems like a massive waste of resources when recycled concrete, once that's demolished, you'd think, oh, there's not much we can do with that. But actually, it can be crushed up and reused as aggregate for the next project. And so although it's kind of downgrading, you could say, maybe in the quality of it, it's still very much a useful thing. And then steel can pretty much be recycled forever. It's, I think construction demolition waste is definitely some big opportunities there. And Auckland Council has got this waste minimisation and innovation fund out. So for anyone with amazing ideas at how we could reduce waste in all forms, it's really cool. And the fact that they've got a big pocket of money, I imagine, that they can give out to people who have bright ideas in that space.
Because we only recycle 28% of our waste, so...
Yeah, it's something crazy small, hey?
Yeah. What do you think needs to be done then to... Because I guess you say it's a really complex issue, but if you were to identify something that we could look at.
Yeah, I guess, and a whole bunch of the problems, like I get tagged in so many things daily about why don't we do this and why don't we do this, like why don't we have this incineration thing, and you can watch all of these videos on social media and you're like, oh, they have a 3-minute video and it says incineration is the way to go because of this, this and this, and I feel like a 3-minute video isn't really long enough to fully capture the complexity of that topic, not to mention, the capital costs of that kind of infrastructure, something that we just can't do in a jiffy. It's really something that there needs to be a long-term plan for. And I guess one thing that I think we can do, I mean, there I was saying, I think C&D waste is a big deal. And I think, if the industry really kind of cleaned up their act and we saw a lot more environmental best practice being demonstrated throughout the industry and we made sure we're recycling and in our engineering projects, we're designing for reuse, we're designing, thinking of the end of life of the infrastructure or whatever we're designing. And so that then at the end of life, that there isn't so much waste. But then I also am a big advocate in individual waste. And I think that there are so many easy swaps that we can do every day. And because I guess individually, that's something we can start doing now. Legislation and industry changes takes time often, and it's sometimes a very follow the leader approach. So I think whereas individual change, you know, really basic stuff like swapping to reusable coffee cups and everything day-to-day life, reusable nappies for parents, and there's a whole bunch of quite easy things, and it requires breaking habits. And, you know, people are scared of change sometimes, but I don't think it's as hard as they think.
On that note, tell me about Plastic Free July, which is what's been happening there.
Have you heard of Plastic Free July before?
Not until this year, I guess.
No, that's totally cool. Yeah. Well, Plastic Free July, I probably heard about, a couple years ago when I really started getting interested in the waste side of things. And after doing a bit of research, and I went along to a workshop in Auckland, actually, with the founder of Plastic Free July. Her name is Rebecca Prince-Ruiz. I hope I'm saying that right. And she's from Perth, and she started up, I have a feeling it was in a small... It was a small community in Perth in 2011, and she was like, saw this issue with plastic waste, and she's like, oh, stuff this. We're going to do Plastic Free July, and we're going to really... we're all going to have a goal of what we're going to reduce for the month. And, you know, nowadays, I think 177 countries with like 20 plus million people or something last year participated. So that's within 10 years. It's gone global. And so I guess the whole idea of it is it's like a personal challenge. So you say, what am I going to try and reduce a plastic product in my life for the month of July? But it's like a global movement. So there is everybody around a lot of people around the globe are doing it. So if you check out the plasticfreejuly.org website is the global one, but it's got some incredible resources on there that you can use in your workplace to encourage people to get amongst Plastic Free July and see if they can reduce plastic. And also the Plastic Free July Aotearoa Facebook page. So we're calling the campaign in New Zealand Plastic Free July Aotearoa. If you go onto the Facebook page, there's a whole bunch of events. You click on the events and there is so many events all around the country that are happening in the month of July in tune with the theme of the month, plastic free.
Will these habits move beyond just the month of July? Do you think that's something that will happen?
Yeah, I think the founder, Rebecca, has found that. I guess as soon as you do start, so even if you're starting from the very beginning, and I guess actually this month, this Plastic Free July is quite significant for New Zealand because the bag ban comes in on the 1st of July. End of last year, they brought out the bag ban. And so that's why you've seen Countdown transitioning to those thicker bags. Pack and Save, I think, have got rid of those yellow plastic bags they had that were optional. But everywhere, fruit and veg shop, the warehouse, all those kind of places where you'd often get a plastic bag at the checkout, they're no longer allowed to give that. There's specific requirements that the bag has to meet. If they do like those thick Countdown bags, I think they've got to be sturdy handles and like over 15 microns thick. That's not exactly the scientific definition there, but it's along those lines. I don't unfortunately think it counts to the produce bags in supermarkets, unfortunately, but it really does include a whole bunch of them, including compostable alternatives.
On that note of plastic bags, I did want to ask about plastic recycling in New Zealand, because currently we only recycle PET and I think the milk bottles. So the issue is we ship a lot of our plastic overseas. So I was just wondering what's happening to develop those processes back home.
I can't say that I'm aware of anything. What I have been looking at recently is, and I think will be really and a really interesting development in the years to come, because, for example, the EU last year brought out a plan around plastics, and the circular economy is just keeping things in the loop. So, you know, at the moment we're a very make, take, and then dispose of economy, right? It's very linear. And so you go to the shop, you buy a packet of crisps and you put it in a plastic bag, you take it home, you take it out of the plastic bag, so that plastic bag's life is pretty much over. The crisps out of the bag, and then the bag that the crisps came in, that's life is over, and you put them both in the bin. You know, it's very linear, whereas the idea of a circular economy is so that, for example, that maybe that chip packet is compostable, and so you put it back into the garden and then it goes into compost and maybe helps grow more food, or that plastic bag, you don't have that plastic bag in the first place, and instead you're using a fabric bag that just keeps getting reused and reused and reused. And so it's putting it back into the cycle so it doesn't ever have to be disposed of. And so I guess then we wouldn't need disposal options at the end of life, because it wouldn't be an end of life, it stays in our system. And that's the way it kind of mimics nature, because nature's like that, you know, everything has its purpose. It some animals like literally have a lifespan of a couple of days, but it's all part of the process, and they live and they do what they do, and then they die and they go back into the